It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The man once considered among the most powerful people in Illinois is going on trial.
For decades, he commanded the state house. Now Mike Madigan's future will be decided in a courthouse.
Well, Mike Madigan has been indicted on federal racketeering and bribery charges as a part of what federal prosecutors call the Madigan Enterprise.
The allegations, of course, are so broad that they really kind of rocked not only Chicago, but the Capitol in Springfield.
Right.
Too.
The indictment against the longtime Speaker of the Illinois House came down more than 2.5 years ago. In the meantime, several people in Madigan's inner circle have either been convicted or pleaded guilty. Jury selection in the case against Madigan and his longtime friend and Springfield lobbyist Mike McClain started this week. Following the case against Madigan and others for Capital News Illinois has been Hannah Meisel, and she joins me now from the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in Chicago to talk through what's been happening. Hannah, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Brian, thanks for having me.
And listeners, I should say this story is developing in order to make our schedules meet, or rather working around the court schedule. Hannah and I spoke Thursday evening. So, Hannah, this has been a long time in coming. The FBI and prosecutors have spent more than a decade building up this case. We heard racketeering and bribery charges mentioned in the montage. There's a lot more, from AT&T Illinois to ComEd, even a former Chicago alderman. What are some of the accusations in this case?
Well, the government alleges that Mike Madigan solicited and accepted bribes from entities like ComEd and AT&T, but not in the form of like cash stuffed in envelopes, but via jobs and contracts for his political allies, often for little to no work. In exchange, prosecutors claim ComEd and AT&T got what they wanted, legislation passed in Springfield. Feds also claim that Madigan's power in state government and politics, his longtime real estate tax practice, all amounted to a, quote, criminal enterprise whose purpose was to, quote, exercise, preserve, and enhance Madigan's political power and well-being, financially reward political allies for their loyalty, and to generate income for members of the enterprise. Some of this, the government says, included drumming up business for his law firm via a Chicago alderman who had a development project going on in his neighborhood. But what Madigan didn't know is that Alderman was cooperating with the FBI, which has, you know, a decade later led up to all of this. And I should also say, feds allege that those within Madigan's orbit used threats, intimidation, and extortion. The main person within Madigan's orbit is his co-defendant you mentioned, longtime Springfield lobbyist Mike McClain, who was for many years one of his closest friends. McClain was also already convicted last year in the related ComEd trial.
So this is his second go around. I want to pick up on something you said. You mentioned this is not about envelope stuff with cash. I'm reminded of the great Mayor Quimby from the Simpsons town of Springfield, who referred to a sack, a sack with a dollar sign on it. But that's not what this is about. And our friend and colleague Dave McKinney this week had a story in which he asked David Axelrod, the CNN commentator and Obama's political guru, for his take on Madigan. It's worth noting that Axe, before he was those things, he covered politics for the Chicago Tribune. And this is what he had to say.
In the context of Chicago, there was a time when this was considered normal practice. So among the old timers, it's like, well, wait a second, this was a crime? I didn't realize this was a crime.
So, Hannah, this idea of taking something that seemed legal and making it illegal, is this something you've heard from others as a sort of critique or a defense that we may be hearing during this trial?
Oh, yes. In those related cases, we've heard defense attorneys say over and over that what their clients did was all good legal lobbying. And that, like, ComEd and AT&T, for example, engaged in years of sophisticated lobbying strategy to get what they wanted in Springfield. It wasn't just a few jobs or contracts that, made Madigan move on what they had wanted, that they had done the work, that they had built the coalitions that, you know, convinced the speaker. And that's, you know, what he responded to, not these measly jobs and contracts, as it's kind of been put. And, you know, part of lobbying is building and maintaining relationships with elected officials. We've often heard from witnesses in these trials who are current and former lawmakers and lobbyists that they've been on either side of requesting help with, like, finding jobs for people. And they argue that job recommendations shouldn't be made illegal. nor should, you know, lobbying.
Although I guess the difference that one might draw here is that getting someone a job as the, you know, assistant deputy vice garbage collector for the 29th ward is different than getting someone a job with a private company. I guess that's what we'll see play out in court. So I mentioned the multiple prosecutions and guilty pleas on the way to this case. Looking back, what are some of the bigger developments that stand out to you?
Well, like I said, last year, I sat through the ComEd case that resulted in convictions for McClain, plus the former president of ComEd and two other lobbyists. Also last year, Madigan's longtime, very loyal chief of staff was convicted for perjury and attempted obstruction of justice for lying to a grand jury about what he knew about Madigan, even though he was given immunity for his testimony. Those are two really big ones, but we've also seen the tax evasion convictions and guilty pleas for some of these folks who were, you know, they had these contracts, these lobbying contracts with AT&T and ComEd. It's my understanding that they're kind of, I don't know, you could say collateral damage as the feds kept digging and digging into this, you know, Madigan's orbit.
So we talked about the prosecutions, but last month, former AT&T Illinois president Paul LaSchiazza went on trial. And in that case, the jury deadlocked. The judge declared a mistrial. You put it in a story last week, though that trial's outcome was a hopeful development for Madigan, it's unclear if it'll have any bearing on the former speaker's own case. Why is that?
Well, two things. You know, every jury is different. You know, we thought when we were waiting for the jury to, you know, return with their results, early on, we saw that they had a question about, you know, the law as it applied. And then, you know, as it became clear that they were not going to reach a verdict. I don't know, it was very interesting. The Chicago Tribune, give credit to them. They confirmed with one of those jurors that said there was actually just one holdout that made it a hung jury. But other than, you know, every jury being different, that case was just a lot smaller, more straightforward. Fewer players. This is just massive, as was the ComEd one. And so I think for those reasons, we really can't say, oh, because that deadlocked and, you know, mistrial was declared, that it means anything for Madigan's.
I want to come back to, you mentioned jury selection, and that has been what's taken up most of the time this week in the Madigan case, at least as we are recording this on Thursday evening. But there's one other big legal issue hanging out there still, and that's the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in June that narrowed the definition of bribery under federal law. How did that affect the proceedings leading up to where we are now?
Well, there was a lot of back and forth legal filings this summer. Ultimately, you know, Madigan's team wanted some of these bribery charges to be thrown out. After many weeks and months, the judge last week ruled that he would not dismiss those charges. So, you know, I'd say it has not meaningfully impacted the case yet, but that doesn't mean it won't. I mean, like, there's lots of things like jury instructions that will be given, you know, in a couple months from now, when all of the evidence is seen and heard. That will be impacted significantly by the Supreme Court's ruling. And also, you know, other things like questions as they come up throughout the trial, objections, you know, ways in which things are phrased. All of those will kind of point back to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision.
If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with Hannah Meisel about the trial of former House Speaker Michael Madigan, which is underway this week in Chicago. Hannah, most of the week was spent on jury selection. How would you characterize the questioning of these potential jurors as the process has unfolded?
Very, very in-depth questions, very detailed questions. The judge is letting this go on, as he says, as long as it needs to, even though he's made it clear that they're totally blowing the schedule that was laid out. You know, it really matters that you have a group of people who are willing to, one, sit through an 11-week trial, which is extremely long, and that would put us basically all the way up to Christmas, and give it their full attention. So, you know, there are logistical, practical questions that are being asked of these potential jurors. But then, you know, it's a matter of their understanding of current events. And if they've been too exposed to news about Madigan, you know, the parties are trying, you know, say, we cannot have this person. They can't bring their preconceived notions into this courtroom when you're, you know, they're supposed to only view the case as the evidence is presented to them. You know, it also has to do with people's temperament. And some of these potential jurors have been on the witness stand for 20, 30 minutes of questioning. It's a lot, but you know, all of the parties want to have a group of 12 jurors who are going to be fair and impartial, plus 6 alternates, which is, you know, I haven't covered courts all my life or anything all my career, but certainly the largest number of alternates that I have seen yet.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, because I was on, as you know, Hannah, you might remember, because I think we were working together at the time. I was on a jury for a murder case. That panel was done in a day, maybe two. The person ended up is still spending 83, 87 years, something like that, in prison, and it was a far less in-depth process. Of course, probably a lot less coverage of the case heading into it, but all right, let's move on, because opening statements are expected next week at some point. The Associated Press pointed out a lot of the evidence expected in this trial has already been previewed in some of these other cases we were talking about. So aside from the question of where the jury will go with this, what are we expecting to come out of this case? Any surprises you're looking forward to? I guess by definition, you can't tell me if it's going to really be a surprise, but tell me what you're watching for as this trial unfolds.
Well, I think some witnesses that we haven't heard from before in those other trials will be very interesting, if not surprising. We found out this week that the political consultant, Alina Hampton, who nearly 7 years ago now publicly accused Madigan of failing to protect her from sexual harassment back in 2016, she'll be testifying. We'll also hear from former Chicago Alderman Danny Solis, who was cooperating with the FBI wearing a wire. That'll be really fascinating. But yes, as you said, a lot of it we have already seen in the ComEd case, in the 18T case last month, and in the case of former Madigan Chief of Staff Tim Mapes last year.
All right, Hannah. So this case is going to be argued. It's going to take weeks. Eventually, there will be appeals. Regardless of all that, talk about how Illinois politics has changed since Madigan was the most powerful man to where he is now in the dock.
Well, it's been almost 4 years since Madigan stepped away from most of his political power in Illinois, and things have changed a lot. You know, some of it is a reflection of national politics, but some of it is the dynamics within, you know, the House Democratic caucus that Madigan spent decades and decades building up. I always think it's so interesting that Madigan had the largest majority, supermajority actually, in his caucus. He won that through the blue wave election in 2018. A lot of suburban women came in, and it was those same suburban women who, when he was named public official A in charging documents in July of 2020, they're the ones who said, "Hey, we are not standing for this," and they kind of led to his ultimate downfall. You know, one of my favorite political cliches that is culture eats policy for breakfast. So you can try to legislate all you want, and people certainly have, you know, proposed many new laws on lobbying and campaign contributions and all of that. But it's the people who are either going to follow those things or not. And Madigan and a lot of people who were his close allies are gone from the General Assembly and have been for quite some time. And things have definitely changed.
It is a new day in Springfield. Well, you used one of your favorite political aphorisms. I'm going to use one of mine, which is from Michael Kinsley, who said that the scandal is not what's illegal. The scandal is what's legal. And maybe we're going to see something that people used to think was legal made illegal at the outcome of all of these cases. Hannah Meisel, thank you for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian.
Before we take a break, a quick preview of what's coming up on the show next week. On Monday, we'll continue our series of conversations on the last year in Israel, Gaza, and beyond. This time, we'll be hearing from Palestinian Illinoisans about coping with tragedy, fighting to be heard, and seeking hope for the future. Next week, we'll be hearing from some public radio personalities as well. You'll hear a conversation I'm scheduled to record this weekend with Scott Simon, host of NPR's Weekend Edition Saturday. He was born and spent part of his childhood in Chicago. I'll also be talking live with Jeremy Hobson, former host of Here and Now and host of the call-in talk show The Middle. He got his start right here in radio in Urbana at our home station, Illinois Public Media. If you have thoughts about anything we've talked about or anything we are planning on talking about or you think we should be talking about, let us know. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can find that address and every other way to contact us on our website, 21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.